this is a human brain. It's not a real human brain because that would be awkward and potentially a little messy and maybe even illegal. I don't know what the laws are for carrying human brains into church. This is a model of the human brain. I've been reading this great book about neuroscience lately, and I've been reminded again about how fascinating this few pounds of stuff is for us. The brain, of course, has various parts. The beauty of this little model is that it can take the brain apart. The complicated part is that my brain doesn't work well enough to put it back together again fully. You'll be glad that I'm a preacher and not a brain surgeon. But down inside our brain is the amygdala, the oldest part of the human brain. Now, we humans are interesting. Over the years, and by years I mean billions and billions of years, we have added on to our brain. Sort of like if you live in a house for a long time and you decide to remodel and add a den or a bedroom as your family changes and grows. We've added on to our brains over time. The amygdala, though, this part down inside here, is the oldest part of the human brain. And scientists, neurosurgeons, and others tell us that before humans could speak and sing, before we built houses and added on to them, before we communicated with the general public via Twitter, that part of our brain down in there was doing its thing. The amygdala is the part of the brain, the room in your brain, if you will, that controls emotions. The amygdala's best work is done around fear. That's where the amygdala really shines. That's the part of our brain that teaches us to be afraid of things. That's the part of our brain that before we built houses or had Twitter or could speak, told us, look out! There's a saber-toothed tiger over there that wants to eat you, so be afraid. Or don't go to the edge of that cliff, you will fall off. Be afraid. As we got more creative and built things like houses that had kitchens, that had stoves, that's the part of our brain that also tells us, don't touch the hot stove. You should be afraid. You can sort of think of the amygdala as a fireworks show inside your brain. When something happens, when there is an element of fear, it sends off a signal, a giant firework, a giant explosion. And it, as I said, that part of our brain does its best work around fear, and so when there's something to fear, it sends off a really good firework show of signals. So what's interesting about the brain is that the amygdala does a good job of recognizing fear and a good job of encouraging in us an immediate response. There's a saber-toothed tiger. Run. And that's what that part of our brain tells us. Be afraid. Get away. However, that part of our brain is not so sophisticated and organized. It can't really develop a plan. You can run, but you still have to go back to where your food is. But that part of the brain doesn't know exactly how to do that. Over time, another part of our brain came into being, the prefrontal cortex, the front part up here. That part of our brain, when we're afraid, says to the responsive, fear-based part, hey, don't worry. I got this. The prefrontal cortex says, I'm really good at making plans. And so I see those fireworks saying, fear, fear, fear. I'm going to make a plan for how you deal with that fear. So for instance, let's say you're on an airplane and the pilot of the plane, the captain of the plane has just said to turn off your devices and you're about to take off down the runway and sail into the air. And at that moment, you have the sudden sensation that you left the stove on. And there's nothing you can do about it because you're supposed to turn your phone off and you're about to take off. Now, that's not quite the same as being eaten by a saber-toothed tiger, but it's a fear nonetheless. And so there you are on the plane, and that fearful part of your brain begins to send out those fireworks. Be afraid. Be afraid, be afraid, down in your amygdala. Now, it can't develop a plan, so it's just sending out these fireworks of fear, 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 and your prefrontal cortex says, I got this, I can worry so well. That's what the job, the front part of our brain does. It's the worrying part of the brain, among other things. And it says, fear. Maybe I left the stove on. Maybe the house will burn down. Did we pay our homeowner's insurance if the house does burn down? As soon as I can use my phone, I'm going to call my neighbor. What if they don't answer? Does that mean they had a heart attack? Does that mean they're ignoring me? Because, you know, I forgot to take that casserole dish back 3 weeks ago. What if they don't answer the phone because they're mad because I didn't take the dish back and my house burns down? And while I'm worrying about leaving the stove on, I think I left the iron on too. And I probably left that lamp on in the living room, the one with the frayed cord, and so my house will likely burn down 3 times. Before the plane has left the runway. Because the prefrontal cortex is very good at worrying. It's a great part of the brain. It does its job really, really well. So here's another thing about the brain that I've been reading. Our brains are very, very dependable. It looks like a big glob of gunk, and it is, but it's very reliable. Our brains like a routine. Our brains like a pattern. If you set your alarm for 6 a.m. every morning for 2 months, and you forget to set your alarm after 2 months, the chances are you're still going to wake up at 6 a.m. because your brain has found a pattern, and it will wake you up more or less because the brain likes a routine. The brain likes a habit. Unless you have some form of illness or some kind of trauma or some kind of injury, your brain, for the most part, is very, very regular. If you always sit on pew 3 to your left, your brain likes that. And so you always come in and you sit on pew 3, and if someone else is in your spot, your brain says, oh, that's not good. I can't sit on row 14 on the right because I always sit on pew 3 on the left, because your brain just likes that experience. Your brain likes that habit. Your brain likes that routine. We can kind of think of our brain function as cars driving through our brain. That's way oversimplified, but a car drives down the same road, let's say it's a dirt road, and it begins to dig a rut. It begins to dig a path, and that rut over time gets deeper and deeper into the dirt so that car can only go back and forth on that same path. That's how worry is. If we worry over and over and over every day, we become very good at worrying. Because our brain is digging in this path, this deeper and deeper regular worry path. So our brain becomes very comfortable with that worry car driving in the same way over and over and over again. Now, meanwhile, another thing is happening in our brain. Well, actually, billions and billions and billions of things are happening in our brain. But meanwhile, that's what makes it so fascinating. But meanwhile, while our cars are driving on the same pathway, the worry car over and over and over, or the grocery list-making car over and over and over, or the, oh my gosh, this is the weirdest sermon I've ever heard, I wish you would be quiet car over and over and over, while those are driving in our brains, this other thing is happening, and that is that dopamine is shooting around in our brain. If fear is like fireworks, and if worry is like a car stuck in a rut, then dopamine is like a hummingbird, or thousands and thousands, millions of hummingbirds in our brain, just sort of flitting back and forth. It's actually a chemical, but I sort of like the picture of a bunch of birds floating around in our brain. So dopamine is connecting the parts of our brain. All of these things are really, it's not one solid part, it's not 7 or 8 rooms, it's millions and millions of little parts, and the dopamine is sending messages from this part to that part, saying do this, do that, say this, say that, try this, try that. Dopamine also helps our worry car get out of the rut. It's so interesting. Dopamine comes along to the worry car and says, yeah, you've been driving that way for an ever and ever, but why don't you try driving over here? Why don't you try driving over there? Why don't you do this? It's also interesting that we can create dopamine sitting right here. There aren't really many things that you or I can do right here. Actually, there are tons of things we can do right here, but right here, you're creating dopamine in your brain. A prominent politician said in the news the other day that we have a limited amount of energy and therefore he does not exert his because he's afraid he will run out. Did you see that in the news? I don't think that's medically sound. I could be wrong. dopamine is the same way. You're not going to run out because we can create more dopamine. So you're sitting right here, and you can cause your brain to produce more dopamine, more hummingbirds sending these messages back and forth. That's one of the reasons I wanted us to use these instruments this morning, because it helps us hear and experience church in a different way. It shakes our routines. It shakes our church routine when you all get a kazoo to play. That's something different, and so creates something new in our brain. One of the things that dopamine helps us do is to be thankful. It produces gratitude in a way. The psalm we read, Psalm 100, we've read two translations, we'll read a third. That phrase, enter into God's gates with thanksgiving. That's the phrase I want you to keep in mind this morning. What does it mean to be thankful? What does it mean to be grateful? When you and I are grateful, when you and I are thankful, our brain produces more dopamine. Dopamine then can say to the worry car, hey, why don't you try something new? Dopamine helps us not worry so much. Gratitude can be an antidote to worry. Now, a few clarifications, a few disclaimers, a few caveats. Number one, I'm not a scientist, I'm not a doctor. Just don't use this as medically sound advice, okay? Number two, I'm way oversimplifying the work of our brain. I mean, way, 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 way oversimplifying, okay? So it's far more complicated than this. Number three, there are 10 jillion factors at work on how our brains work. As I was thinking about this sermon this morning, I emailed a couple of psychiatrists and a Jungian psychologist, and they had fascinating things to say about the various influences on our brain. So it's not just a matter of your amygdala and your prefrontal cortex and dopamine. There are all of these other factors at play. I want you to be aware of that. The other disclaimer I need to say is not all worry is bad, okay? If that saber-toothed tiger is about to eat you, it's okay to be afraid. And it's okay for your brain to develop a plan to get away from that saber-toothed tiger and to go back and find your food or whatever. The other thing I would say is not all gratitude is good. That may sound kind of funny. It's probably not wise to be grateful for money that's been put in the offering plate if that money came because you stole it from someone else. So not all worry is bad, and not all gratitude is good. You need to remember that. The other thing I would say is that brain science is changing so, so quickly these days. There's remarkable research being done into the brain. So even those books I've read the past few weeks could likely be outdated in the morning, certainly in a month or a year or 10 years. I think of sermons as sort of just a rough draft of life, or like the newspaper is the first rough draft of history. So this is just a rough draft here. I would also say that I am not saying, oh, just be happy, be grateful, and all of life will be okay. I'm not saying that at all. What I am saying is that to some degree or another, you and I can train our brains to be grateful. We have the miraculous ability to train our brains to be grateful. And to some degree or another, considering all of these other factors, gratitude eases worry. We can train our brains to be more grateful, and to some degree or another, gratitude eases worry. So I want to make a suggestion, a very practical suggestion. I would encourage you, invite you, suggest to you that tomorrow morning or this afternoon or some point, make a list of 10 things for which you are grateful. Write it down on a piece of paper. Make a list of 10 things you are grateful. Now, there are a lot of things to worry about. You can worry about the Russians hacking elections. You can worry about our need to care for the environment. Maybe you want to worry about saber-toothed tigers attacking you in your yard. Probably not that, but there are some real concerns that need our attention. Pay attention to those things. The world and your brain also need you to be grateful. The world and your brain need your gratitude also. Today, I'm thankful for these musicians. As they end the choir year, as Sam goes to explore new opportunities, I'm grateful for him. I'm grateful for those members of our church who were downtown yesterday and who are downtown today at the Pride service and celebration and parade. I'm thankful for our church school leaders. Make a list of 10 things for which you are grateful. Make that in the morning every day. And then about lunchtime, take it out of your pocket or your purse or wherever you keep that list and read it. And then before you go to bed, read that list as well. Do that every day for 30 days. Make your gratitude list every day for 30 days, and then tell us how you feel. This psalm writer wrote, "Enter God's courts with praise, enter into God's gates with thanksgiving." Those words were probably written 2,500 years ago. That psalm writer was not a neuroscientist and didn't have the medical understanding that we do. But that person understood that living with gratitude was important. Living with gratitude is vital. For this psalm writer, as a Jew, to go to the temple in Jerusalem was the most important thing she or he could do in life. The temple in Jerusalem, that mount on which that temple was built, was considered the center of the universe. The very center of life, the very center of existence. To go there, to go to that place, was to be most fully alive. And the psalm writer said that you should enter that place with gratitude. To be most fully alive is to live with gratitude. I am grateful for kazoos and cymbals and accordions and bells. We can use all of those things to make a joyful noise. We can also use those things to remind us that the world is fascinating. Sure, there are things to be afraid of, there are things to worry about, but the world is filled with all of these remarkable, miraculous sights and sounds and smells, and we have the opportunity to give thanks for those things. I'm grateful for church school leaders. I'm grateful for neuroscience. I'm grateful for songs to sing. So let us enter into God's presence with thanksgiving. Let us live with gratitude. Amen.